Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This is Political Conscious. My name is Slick Pablo Vick. Thank you for being here. It's March 31st, the last day of March, and I appreciate everyone for tuning in and sharing your time with us. We got a great show for you guys today, but before I get into the specifics of the show, let me give a big shout-out to my panelists for the day and to the network that hosts us. So Sports Crib Network, great platform for me, and I appreciate James always giving me a chance to speak once a week at this time, and I can't really do it without them. So thank you guys so much. James is joining us here today. How are you doing today, James?
I'm doing great. Fellas, doing great.
Thank you, James. And also my good friend, Sean Hartness. Sean, how are you, boss?
I'm doing good, man. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. And we will be later joined by our panelist from last week, Josh McWhorter, who's a dear friend of ours, another College of Charleston grad. We're all East Coast guys here except James, but with James, we covered the whole United States like Manifest Destiny, so thank goodness for that. But let's talk a little bit about this week's news. A lot of fun things happening. Our president has a 35% approval rating, which is, I don't know if you guys noticed, pretty bad. Not if you compare it to Congress.
No, that's great.
But in presidential terms, it's pretty bad. Obama, Clinton, and Ronald Reagan never even had an approval rating that low. So we're sitting here about 35%. Another big bombshell was that Mike Flynn, who you guys might remember, resignated from his appointed position because of possible affiliations with Russia, has said that he might take immunity in exchange for possible testimony about the investigation going on. That's big news because even the Trump administration themselves say if you're requesting immunity, you got something to hide. So before we get into everything else, let me ask you guys, Sean specifically, is there any, you see anything about someone asking for immunity? You think that's setting himself up for protection? Or do you think it's all just some kind of political play?
Both? Is that a safe answer?
Yeah.
I think he's, maybe he has something really important to say. Maybe he has something that's minor. But I guess he wants immunity either way because he's probably talking about the president of the United States to some extent, which, I mean, the ramifications could be strong if you make him mad. I think it'll be a little more than just a Twitter attack.
James, what do you think? What do you think about Michael Flynn possibly asking for immunity? Does he have something to hide? Is he going to expose something? Or is this just another distraction? There's so many of them.
No, this is more than a distraction. You know, I mean, first of all, you know, when you look at Flynn's record, you know, and the reason, I mean, he was fired from the Marine Corps, you know. Well, basically, you know, once again, he tendered his resignation and he was let go. All right. Which is basically why he ended up in the Trump, part of the Trump organization. It wasn't that he was a hero, but I guess since he didn't get captured, you know, he was the best that Trump could offer. But, you know, Vic, you have a law background, man, and I mean, you know, I don't know, you know, whether this is any different than any other criminal case, but usually, you know, when one of the parties asks for immunity, that means he's usually, like, you know, at least knee-deep in what was going on and knew that he was taking part in it.
That's a pretty astute observation, James, and you're right. I think if you're specifically asking and coming out and saying, hey, you know, I might need the possibility of immunity, you are sending an undertext, which is that, hey, things might about to start getting revealed and I might be complicit in this, so the only way I can see myself being saved at the end of all this is if I'm the one who comes clean now, and maybe I can get protection at the very end. Now, this is, you know, in the street, that wouldn't fly. And I'm not going to repeat the phrase because I don't want to adhere to violence, but there's a certain phrase about snitches that you just don't do those type of things. But I think in this instance, when we're talking about the integrity of our political system, about the fabric of America, then in this instance, I'm going to be like Harry Potter. I'm going to catch that snitch, and I'm going to say, hey, sing your little song, because we need to hear everything. We need everything to be transparent, and we need everything to be on a fast track, because this is taking too long. This is taking too long. We're getting close to 70 plus days here. I think we're over 70 days now of the Trump administration. No major legislation has been passed. We have an all-time low approval rating of recent presidents. And on top of all that, a lot of positions in our government aren't even filled. So there's a lot of things going on as far as the politics go and about the investigation. And, you know, we don't have any more information than the next guy or the next woman. So there's no reason for me to really delve into that. I just thought it was an interesting tidbit that Michael Flynn, one of Trump's guys, a hand-appointed guy, could possibly be turning on him. I think that's pretty interesting because at the end of the day, we're here to save ourselves. But I will say that if Trump is working with Putin, we know what Putin does to people who oppose him. And I hope you didn't hear me say that because I could end up on his list. But going on to the next one.
All right.
Charleston, South Carolina. That's where I'm currently located. That's where Sean was staying. That's where we met. And that's where Josh lives now. He's going to phone in a little bit. Charleston, South Carolina. Pretty quiet place, aside from obvious church shootings. An 18-year-old kid from Ladson, South Carolina, goes to the Charleston airport, tries to get on the plane, but is arrested because there's an ongoing investigation with him and his support of ISIS. This is in South Carolina. Now, this young man is an American citizen, born in America, but I have to say his parents were born in Syria. And I am not the type of guy to say, you know, that a certain religion acts a certain way, because I have been a victim of, my religion has been a victim of brutalities from all kinds of other religious people and non-religious people. So I think evil is evil and good is good no matter what. But I'm more concerned about the issue of airports. How safe are they? Are we doing the best we can? Thank goodness that we could stop this before anything bad happened. We don't know what this kid's plans were. We know if he was going to try to join maybe other affiliates. But are we doing enough, Sean, and are we doing too much? Where do we draw the line of personal freedoms? Where can we say, hey, this is allowed and this isn't? What are we willing to sacrifice? And we all remember after September 11th, we gave up some of our most fundamental rights, things that people are complaining about right now. The Patriot Act, they're allowed to surveil us in different ways. That's the very argument we're having now, which I think is so funny because we're talking about, oh, look at these leaks, look at these surveillances. Well, when we were really scared, the most scared we've been in recent history, we gave up all those rights. And now people are acting like they're a big deal again. So that aside, Sean, where do we draw the line? Where can we give up some of our rights, some of our privacy in exchange for protections?
Well, did you say that this young man had an open investigation, that he was they told him at the airport that he couldn't fly because...
Well, he was arrested twice, okay? So he was arrested once before, and I think it was a gun possession, and they were already starting to dig up certain contacts he had with ISIS.
Okay.
And while that investigation was ongoing, they intercepted him at the airport before he could get on to what they think, maybe fly across seas and join the organization in person on their turf. So...
Well, to answer your question, then, since there was an open investigation and there was history on this young man, then I have no problem with that if they stop him at an airport. Whenever you are under investigation for something like that, I mean, I have no issue with them being stopped. Or just as if you're on any other kind of list, if you've broken into a house, I mean, it shows up on your criminal record. When that seems normal. But I read an article today, and I was looking at it, that in airports now, the number of cell phones that have been opened up by border control has skyrocketed over the past couple. There's no statistics that I saw, but since Trump took office, it's gone up. But from 2015 to 2016, it went up at an astronomical rate. And that's just people coming in with green cards, that's people coming in with visas, that's people coming in just as tourists, and you have to give them the password to your phone to see all of your conversations, to see all of your applications, to see all of your data usage. That's not okay with me. So, I mean, we need to be careful. We need our airports to be safe, sure. But there's also, you can't just have indiscriminate privacy taken away in airports, especially if you're profiling.
And I agree with you there, and I'll get back to this story, but that actually reminds me of another story I read about Coastal Carolina, a school that is, you know, right close to my hometown of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And at Coastal Carolina, their cheerleading group is actually currently suspended because of possible claims of alleged prostitution and not doing their own schoolwork and buying alcohol for underage people. So there's a current investigation going on there, and when the cheerleaders went to practice, the police were there waiting for them, and the first things they asked for were their cell phones and dug through all their cell phones. James, how do you feel about that? And this is something that has nothing to do with national security like our other case. This is something, you know, something where lives aren't at risk.
Well, you know, see, that's kind of where, you know, there's a fine line between, you know, I guess the term that I'm looking for is evidentiary procedure, where, you know, if you have something that's related to the case, then, you know, for instance, you know, if they sent text or posted things on Facebook or any other news media, very similar, I guess, to not similar, but if you remember, I believe it was last month when they had a Marine site where they were showing female Marines that didn't necessarily know that they had been filmed. But the guys that were involved, yeah, I mean, you know, they grabbed their computers, their cell phones, you know. So when it comes to a criminal investigation, you know, I mean, if there's already evidence, sure. But, you know, if it's just a random thing or as you say, profiling, then yeah, you know, there's definitely something wrong with that. These are rights that are supposedly protected under, you know, not only the Bill of Rights, you know, but the Constitution, which that is part of. So, you know, there's been a lot of infringement on our rights due to the Patriot Act. But, you know, there are a lot of countries, for instance, have either one of you been to England?
No, I haven't been.
Well,
no,
you know,
I have
just
not.
Going through the airport, you know, and Heathrow, it's very, intrusive, much more than it is here in the United States. And, you know, I would imagine probably Orleans airport in Paris now. But, you know, these are, you know, things that we agree to exchange in order for us to feel, quote, unquote, safe. So, you know, when you start making people feel paranoia about, their cell phones and computers. I mean, these are things that, I think the growth of social media and technology has almost been, I want to say, superseded by law, because these things are moving much quicker than we can pass legislation.
Yeah, and that's actually a pretty important point, James. And the question I would ask Sean is, as James was saying, if your cell phone or your laptop or your information is part of an investigation or could be possible evidence, with how entwined we are with our technology, with how much we are using our cell phones and our technology to communicate with people, wouldn't everything we do be considered evidence? It's so a part of our lives. And wouldn't that give the police to search our cell phones anytime we want?
If what could search our cell phones anytime we want? Sorry, I missed that.
Because the argument that James was saying is that these cell phones are part of an investigation. So the theory is if they're evidence, then they should be, there should be more of a reason to search them. But the point I want to bring to you and what James is saying is that technology and social media and the way we communicate with these messages are so entwined in us every day that with any investigation that a police officer had, wouldn't he automatically just say, let me see your cell phone? Because we use it so much every day, no matter what.
I mean, it makes sense. Is it legal? Is it right? It depends on the situation, I'd have to say. If it's under investigation and you're being charged, and there's proof that there's evidence that is vital to your investigation and what's going on with you, yeah, then you should have to turn it over like you'd have to turn over anything else. So, I mean, that's just kind of, if it's not breaking the law, then fine. But just coming in and, like I was saying, with an airport, there was a guy that went through, he worked with NASA, and just because he was a Muslim man, they went to his phone, and he's like, the phone's owned by NASA. And they detained him and went back and looked at his phone, and they had it for a few hours. And then he had to give them all of his passwords. So, I mean, he was on an investigation. He works for NASA. It's the first thing to ask for, but can we say yes or no? That's what's important.
Yeah, and honestly, if they don't have a warrant, if someone asks you for your cell phone, there's no warrant, I would be reluctant to hand it over, to be honest with you, because they can't force you to do anything to take that.
Well, the issue is
without a judge saying it's probable cause to do so.
The issue that they're having, though, is in the airports. Right, okay, they can't detain you or do anything, but they can say, no, you can't come in the United States. They can turn you around and reject your entrance.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Also, let's say you're a green card holder or even a United States citizen. You can reject giving your password to your phone. However, they make your life terrible. You get caught in an airport sitting in a little room for 5 to 6 hours. And then, yeah, you get to go and they don't look in your phone, but they make your life unbearable.
Yeah, it's a tough balance. It's a really tough balance. And I don't know if we can ever truly find a way we can protect our own rights and still give up just the right amount to keep ourselves safe. It's hard to do. Do we have Josh in here?
It's hard to do if you don't follow procedure.
Is Josh in here now?
No, he just wanted to send him a text.
All right, just let me know when he's in here, and we'll move on to the next topic. I was started talking about this a little bit last week. I had gone into a local public school, elementary school, and just saw the conditions there and how deteriorated they were, how uninspired the kids were, how unmotivated. And that really struck me, and it's been sticking with me, even past that week, and it will stick with me for the future, I think. It almost inspires me to get into education in one way or another. But these kids are our future. And I've noticed, I've worked a lot of fourth graders, fifth graders, kids of all ranges. Do you see, what differences do you see, Sean, in the younger generations than when we were growing up? What are some of the flaws you think?
Oh, man, my experience would be from teaching, but over in Spain. I think most of the flaws that I saw through my teaching weren't necessarily solely in the kids, because you had a whole, there's a whole mix of kids and how they are. I think it comes down more to a parenting issue, honestly. How kids are being raised, what the parents are holding them responsible for, what responsibilities they're teaching them, and the way in which they're doing it. I think that's where a lot of the fault lies, honestly, from what I've seen and experienced.
And
Sean,
go ahead.
Sean is in, gentlemen. I said Josh is in, gentlemen.
Oh, okay.
Sean.
Hey, Josh, how you doing, man? Everyone, Josh McCorder now with us, good friend of ours. Josh, we were just talking about, you know, education, actually. I know that's a topic you're very passionate about, especially now, you know, with your own young son having to come up in this world and coming up in South Carolina, where we're ranked 50th in education. What are some of your concerns with the younger generations and some of the flaws you see, some of the ways they're different than us? And Sean brought up a really good point about parenting and what an impact that is, but what are some of your worries with Memphis? Like, I mean, what are some of the ways you want him to not be like the average kid in 2017? And Josh, thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate having you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate y'all being patient waiting for me to get on here. The time of your schedule where I get off just as we start. So usually a little bleed over. Come right out and, I mean, this probably says more than enough. I mean, we plan, you know, my wife and I plan to homeschool our son, you know, at least during the early ages. I work with a gentleman who was homeschooled, and he feels very passionate about homeschooling. He said it helped him prepare for when he went to college and was expected to kind of do the work on his own. You know, I used to kind of joke about how South Carolina was 48th in the nation in education, so it wasn't more like we were last. Well, now we're dead last. I know a big issue from my experience when I substitute taught for Dorchester District 2 for a couple of years, and I've also got family who are long time educators. You know, with every new presidency, you get, you know, they usually renew the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and when it was renewed under George W. Bush, that was when it was No Child Left Behind. And that's when you saw a lot of testing going into whether or not schools receive funding or not, and schools started focusing less on the arts, less on stuff that couldn't be tested, so to say, and more on mathematics, sciences, and even strayed away from history, and that became a big focus there. So that troubled me, that there was a focus on teaching kids on how to take a test, not on how to critically think. That was a huge concern of mine. And I, to be honest, I think a big difference between education, you know, today and education when we were younger is that the families in general, kind of going back to what Sean said, parenting, the family unit is not the traditional family unit anymore. It's no longer the mother and the father, or, you know, two parents, or whatever the case may be. It's a single parent, you know, with multiple children. I mean, my mom had three boys that she raised by herself. So not going to be the traditional environment where you have that stability. You're going to have kids who have to take on stuff outside of school, where school's no longer as important to them. And that's unfortunate. We have to find a way to make school important to these kids, but we have to make it about teaching kids. Another issue as well is that when they're with these kids, they're not being taught in a manner for them to learn. they're being taught in a manner for them to be tested. And, you know, sometimes by rote or whatever the case may be, there's a lot of improvements that need to be made. There's been so many studies that have been done, you know, to help with education. Unfortunately, you're never going to get it unless you have the money. At this point, we need to start looking outside of the country, in my opinion. You know, look at countries such as South Korea and Germany that have very successful education programs, and start taking notes from them on what we can do to better educate our kids.
And that's not a bad idea. What do you think about that, James?
You know, I'm really kind of torn on this because, our generation was kind of brought up, on testing, but I guess it was a different measurement rather than, you know, how many. It was more of an individual thing. I can remember, you know, taking proficiency tests, in high school and junior high school. But it wasn't so much to see, how the class did, which is what I guess the No Child Left Behind it kind of went by the numbers. And I think when you start looking at children as statistics, instead of looking at them as individuals with their own particular needs, I think you not only do the children a disservice, but you also do the education, the whole concept of education. You do it a complete disservice because you dilute. What a kid is supposed to, absorb, and you assume that they're all absorbing at the same time, and you just can't do that. I mean, you know, it doesn't work.
Sean, any opinions?
Yeah, I wanna say that I agree with what both Josh and James have said about the topic, and I wanna add in another curveball, and I think one of the biggest issues, and we're talking about parenting, and as I said earlier, that's one of my big concerns with the kids. But also, what we pay teachers is embarrassing. I've heard my whole life, teachers don't teach for the money. They teach because they love the job. Sure, but if you can barely make a living doing it, and they expect more from teachers over time, it needs to be treated as a profession, a professional. These people are professionals. They're educating the future. And they're not able to do it well. And obviously, we don't have good teachers, and there's the lack of teachers because no one wants to get paid nothing to have that asked of them. And so I think that's one way we could definitely start a good way of fixing the system is realize, wait a second, we need to value these people and start paying them accordingly.
Yeah. Sean, that's a unique perspective. And, you know, I'm going to challenge you. Give me your solution to this issue.
A solution? I would say find funding in public schools, offer grants, give these people money to do their job. And when you see the improvements, I don't even think that they'll notice a pain in their pocketbook. It's amazing to me the amount of money that we spend on other things that don't help us, the amount of money we pour into the education system. Redirect those funds that you're pouring in the education system to do these studies, to revamp all these testings every 5 years, to come up with these silly teaching methods. The money that goes into that, if you distribute it amongst teachers and increase salaries, the issues we have in education would greatly decrease, I think, in an amazing amount of time.
That's true. No, I agree with you 1,000%. I don't disagree with you. But the problem is this, that the current administration wants to cut funding to education, cut funding, especially to public schools. And these are the schools that need it most.
Yeah, but we're talking on a state level, too.
Oh, and don't even get me started on a state level. People say, oh, the state should have the chance to do the things the way they want to implement it. But come on, Josh and I live in South Carolina, man.
No, and I understand that. But this is something that, I mean, you have to change in elections. This is something that people have to run on. This is something that people as a society have to get behind. It's not that the politicians cut funding is because they value our teachers. They don't value our teachers, and they know they can get away with paying them more because no one's going to do anything about it. Now, if you get the people behind it, make people realize we want teachers to get paid more. We want our teachers to improve. This is more important to us than other things right now. This is what we're voting about. I think it can be done.
Can I interject in here a little bit, Vic? Because, two things. First of all, if you've been to different societies, you always find the same argument. I mean, I don't care where you go. You know, you can go to China, you can go to Timbuktu, you can go to France. I mean, anywhere you can hear this same argument about the people that are educating the children do not get paid enough or so forth and so on. Number one, it's like any other profession. I mean, a lot of people go into teaching maybe because they couldn't pass the major that they intended. So this is something that they fall back on. You know, maybe this is something that they thought that they were going to do for a couple of years until that dream job came along. So a lot of the teachers are bitter. Not only are they not getting paid, but then, once they get into the system, there's actually no way for them to advance because, unless they go to an institution of higher learning, then, that's basically the only thing that they can do. It's almost like being, stuck in a caste. They just don't have a little star on their forehead, but you expect these people to, they're gonna make a minimum amount of salary, but yet and still you expect them to do a good job. So when you put people in a position where they're not being rewarded, there's no incentive for them to, really teach the people that they're bringing along unless they are dedicated, to that. Because like you say, it doesn't pay.
No, it doesn't. And, people, when they want to have a good profession and you hear kids talking about it, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a doctor, I want to be this. And then you got that one kid in the class like, I want to be a teacher, and everyone's like, oh, that's cute. We don't value it as a real profession to go, yes, it's hard to be a teacher. You have to work at it. You have to go to school. You have to get really good grades to be a teacher. And then maybe if you're good at it, you can make money and have a good life or whatever. That doesn't even exist. I mean, I've never heard anyone talk about that as a teaching, as that kind of a profession.
Yeah, but my concern, and you're both totally right, and Josh, I'll come to you next and see where you stand. My concern is this. When I went to that public school and I asked them, I said, hey, I'm going to be a lawyer soon. I got to take the bar exam, and if I pass, I'll be a lawyer. And I asked them, what do you guys want to do? You guys want to be lawyers? And I said, no, I want to be a football player. I want to be a singer. I want to be an actor. That's what concerned me, is that they didn't even say a true profession, a goal that you can study for and achieve. And I don't blame them. I mean, I wanted to do, I still want to be a rapper. I still want to be president of the United States. But I wish that there were more concrete ways we could, show to them that you can achieve these things. You can do the things that you want to do. Sure. And it's also good to have a nice fallback plan. Josh, give me some opinions.
Well, I think one of the things that I'd like to kind of look at is that
one thing that Sean kind of pointed out was, you know, pay them better. And, you know, I've mentioned, you know, Korea and Germany and maybe looking at countries and with successful education systems and what they're doing. And if you look at some of the top educators in Korea, some of the top tutors, they actually a lot of them are private tutors and can make up to over what would be six figures U.S. So, yeah, paying them better will obviously get you better results. But, I, you know, kind of like what we talked about last week when we were discussing what would be your ideal, you know, what would be the ideal occupation for someone that would become the president of the United States. And I mentioned, you know, perhaps someone that ran a charity or a nonprofit who's used to working with that limited budget. That's the thing with these public schools. They're working on a limited budget. We can't just pay them, you know, hey, here's six figures. But these teachers do get paid well. They're not exactly stuck, as, you know, James might have been saying, where, you know, that's all you can do. Yeah, you've kind of stuck as an educator in a sense, but you can find ways to flip that on a resume, coordinating, project management, et cetera. There's ways to make that work. If I was able to turn, you know, playing video game tournaments into being able to get a cybersecurity job, somebody can turn getting a teacher into some other type of job. So it's possible. It's out there. It's just how you pitch it. But, you know, yeah, we want to pay them more, but, you know, kind of actually referencing, you know, what I do now in cybersecurity, I also work for a startup. One of the things about working for a startup is that people always talk about the startup culture. Everybody likes to talk about how it's, you know, a little more relaxed. I don't have to wear a tie to work. You know, I don't have to, you know, scan a badge and go sit in a cubicle. A little bit more open. You know, we've even got, you know, beer in the fridge. But this comes at a cost. You know, everything, you know, there's pros and cons to everything. Part of working at a startup is that we don't have that capital. We don't have the budget to be able to just be like, let's pay everybody. I, you know, with what's paid for my position on average, and actually this isn't even considering the promotion I just got, this is what my usual position was, goes around 70 to 75K. Without going into too much detail, it was not quite half of that. It was over half, but, I mean, we're talking well over $20,000 short of that. So that's part of what you have to deal with. So, like being a teacher, you're going to be dealing with that limited budget. Well, what's one of the things that attracts people to a startup? It's the lifestyle. It's management, because management is also going to be usually a little more laid back. Leadership is usually going to be a little hungrier, so usually young folks who are trying to come up. So that kind of leads me into my main point here. We have to look at the leadership. If places are failing, that we can't just blame the teachers and the parents, and above all else, we can't blame the kids. We got to blame the leadership, because it's all trickled down. Go look at these schools, look at the school boards. You know, and granted, those, you know, go really look at those and look at the decisions that have been made. Look at the principals. Look at the superintendents. Those are the people who need to be focused on. You give these teachers more time. You know, allow them some autonomy where they can run their classroom their way. They don't have to teach a test. They don't have to do certain things. They're going to do well. You know, granted, you know, obviously there's going to have to be some type of guidelines that they have to follow. But allow these teachers to teach, and let's quit this pandering nonsense with behavioral issues. And let's also stop the prison, the pipeline system. That's a big issue that kids today don't have to deal with, that we didn't have to deal with growing up, is the prison, the pipeline. If I got in a fight, I was suspended for 3 to 5 days. Now, kid gets in a fight at school, they're arrested. They started a record. They're in the system.
And Josh, and to make it even worse, not only is the kid who started the fight arrested, the kid who is the victim also gets arrested as well most of the time.
Exactly. The only way you can avoid being arrested is to be willing to take that ass with it. And that might put you at medical risk. So now, in order to protect yourself so that you don't have long-term suffering, whether it be psychological or physical, you have to fight back. But now you have a record because of it. And a lot of schools, I don't want to say conservatives, I'm going to try not to go there, but a lot of more traditional individuals believe in the spare the rod, spoil the child sometimes you need to ask what happened before you beat the child's ass. You know, we have to, you know, and look, it sounds kind of weird as for saying we need to stop babying them and deal, you know, but my point is that we have to quit this punitive system. We have to quit this system of punishment. It's, you know, very similar. This is kind of going into a different subject, but you know, this is kind of like my belief on, you know, the prison system. There needs to be less focus on revenge and more on rehabilitation. With kids, we, you know, in schools, we need to focus on, in behavioral problems, we need to focus on counseling, what's going on in the home. We need to focus on that type of stuff. We need to quit putting kids in jail and taking their opportunities away from them. You give teachers the ability to punish kids in their classroom, and I'm not saying allow a teacher to whoop a kid's ass. I'm saying just, you know, have a teacher be like, you know what, get out of my class, and the kid has to leave, and the kid's going to suffer at their grade because of it. And on top, and they're not going to come back with the vice principal eating ice cream and chit-chatting and laughing and sitting back in there. I've seen that happen. I sent a kid off on a classroom that I was substituting for. The kid came back 15 minutes later, had an ice cream sandwich. Him and the vice principal were both eating ice cream sandwiches. He's like, okay, he's not going to be a problem anymore. This kid had just cussed me out and threatened to hit me. And I had to literally say, you need to go, or you need to go ahead and take a swing at me. If that kid had told the vice principal that, I'm pretty sure I'd have been fired. You know, so, you know what ended up happening when he came back in the room? I told the vice principal, like, he can't be here. He physically threatened me in front of all these other kids. You need to take him to the school resource officer and have a conversation.
And Josh, I think you raised an important point there. And this is something I noticed, not just what grade was that when that happened?
This kid was 16 years old. He was junior year of high school.
Yeah. And this is a disturbing trend I noticed as well. And after this little tangent I go off, I'll come to each of you maybe with some closing thoughts. And Josh, I also want to say I'm glad you brought up the prison tagline in there, because I think that's something we should touch on next week. So all the listeners, next week we'll touch on prison, the impact of that, and I'll come to you guys. But first, let me give this a little story. When I went to a fourth-grade classroom, and I was working with them about dispute resolution, I was asking them scenario questions, you know, you're getting bullied at school, what should you do? And the number one answer for 80% of these kids was fight back. Some kind of violent measure. And that is manifesting itself now even to the 16-year-old kid who's threatening Josh, and then some, you know, project 6 years after that, 6 years after that. This is the problem. It starts at a young age. That's why we need to focus on education, because the way we shape them in the early years is going to impact how they end up growing and how they end up ultimately living and who they become. So that's why we need to focus on education. That's why we took the time tonight to talk about it. These are important things. James, any final thoughts on your side, buddy?
I would be very interested in next week's conversation, you know, about prisons and also that you touched upon, you know, that the number one answer was violence. And I'll kind of delve into that with you guys because I'm sure I'll have a much different perspective. But as always, guys, you know, I enjoy, you know, spending this time with you guys. And, hey, I look forward to talking again next week. So thank you, Vic.
Sean, any final words from you, boss?
Also, thanks for having me on, and I just think last thing is, as far as education, we're having all these conversations about how we're going to fix it, and I think it's just got to happen in society. People got to quit saying it's all about education, not doing anything, and actually make it about education.
That's 100 right there. Thank you, Sean. And Josh, any final words?
I just actually more or less agree with Sean. You know, they say it takes a village. We all need to step up, you know, every single one of us all the way across. So it's just if everyone's doing what they can to carry the load, then everything will work out.
And guys, if everyone participates, everyone does a little something, even if it's as much as making a phone call, writing a letter, sending a tweet even, it seems to be working in this administration. Do whatever you can, because we all live in this world. Our children are going to live in this world. Their children are going to live in this world, and we have to make it the best place we possibly can be. And that's not on some hippie shit either. That's like on some real, I'm trying to be honest with you guys. I'm trying to watch football and drink beer and hang out with my friends for the rest of my life. And I can't have a nuclear war going on, okay? I can't have the high schools deteriorating around me. I can't have the elementary schools deteriorating around me. So shout out to public school. Shout out to private school. Shout out to education. Knowledge is power. Appreciate you guys joining us. See you guys next week. Thank you, Sean, Josh, James, and I will see you all next week. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
All right.
See you guys.
Hey, 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 step right up. This is it, a real spicy, whirly, burly, girly show. Step right up, no waiting for seats. The show is just about to start. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
That was